Spawn On Me is the premier podcast spotlighting people of color. Every week, we talk news, what we've been playing, and tell you who's invited to the cookout. Our show is all about talking about gaming through a prism of blackness because we are the culture. Welcome to Bukkake, y'all.
Yo, what up, everybody? This is the Spawn On Me podcast with Khalif Adams. I'm your host, Khalif Adams. I hope you are doing well. Hope you're having a fantastic weekend. I hope you are paying attention to all of the sports, especially the Knicks and the Chiefs. We're going to talk a little bit about that at some point during the show. But first of all, I got to say thank you again for being here on twitch.tv/spawnonme. We are back and getting it in. It was a couple of weeks off for various reasons. The biggest reason I have not been throwing up shows is because we are finally done with recording the Spawnies 3. And I am very, very excited for the show that we're going to be showing at the end of this month. Black History Month is here in full effect. I do not have a Vision Pro while I'm podcasting. I am sad that that is the case. My GoFundMe is here. My PayPal is here. If we can get to $4,000, I would happily take a Vision Pro. We can crowdsource a Vision Pro so I can look at wrestling and all that kind of stuff in a 400-foot screen, which would be fantastic. But Spawnies is in the can. It's now going into the space of being edited. And I am very, very excited because I want to share a quick announcement at the top of the show that is going to be really exciting for what Spawnies 3 is going to wind up being this year. And you know, we love doing the show on Twitch. We love having it on Twitch. It's going to continue to be on Twitch, you know, be on the front page of Twitch at Spawn On Me's channel, twitch.tv/spawnonme. But the announcement is, in addition to having the show on Twitch, the show will be live, hosted, and simulcast on IGN this year. So IGN is going to be broadcasting the Spawnies alongside us here at Spawn On Me. That is a huge deal for what this show is going to be going forward. I'm hoping that we can do it next year as well, but Spawnies is going to be on our channel here. It's going to be on their YouTube and Twitch channels being simulcast on IGN. It is a big deal, so please get yourselves ready for what that is going to be for the Spawnie. So I wanted to get that out of the way and shared early. I'll be putting up some stuff when we do some more promotion of the show. We have a Grammy-nominated artist who's going to be rocking for our music spot this year, which I've seen the music performance this year. And if you loved what we did last year and the year before, you know, we had Mega Ran year one. We had Four Eyes last time. This year, we have another folk where the performance is really dope and it feels really, really cool. So please get excited. Don't do the please clap, because it's not about that. It's about bringing really dope energy in the space that we have. But to bring the rest of the good energy to all the folks here, really quick. Somebody said in the chat, thanks for being, says, I'm ready to see how Paris gets cooked. There's a thing. It won't be him getting roasted in the usual ways, because we just didn't have time for it. But there will be a Paris Lily appearance in the show. We'll keep that as a surprise for you all. That being said, I have to bring on the man, the myth, the legend, the man who has been rocking with me for the past couple of weeks, and you'll be seeing much more of him on Spawn On Me. We have the greatest of all time, the biggest Chiefs fan in the world. We have Cameron Hawkins. How you doing, fan? How's the thing?
I'm super happy because of your announcement just now. That's awesome. That's such a big get. I'm so happy for you, dude.
Dude, thank you so much. You know, it's one of those things where we get a chance to expand the show, and hopefully that'll be something where, you know, we get a chance to make it even bigger. I have some plans for Spawnies 4 that even elevates the show even larger and even bigger. We'll talk about that next year. But how have you been? How's things been going?
Things have been going pretty good. Kansas City in the Super Bowl once again. This is going to be the fourth time in 5 years. So that is, you know, I think that I can, I try and not get cocky. You know what I mean? I, growing up as a Kansas City fan, I had the mentality that I was never going to see Kansas City win a Super Bowl. And I've gotten to see it twice now. Thankfully, my dad was able to see it one time before he passed, because he's the reason I'm a Kansas City fan, and that's really the only sports team I really like. I really, really care about.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that if we get this win, we're it's officially a dynasty. I don't want to get cocky, but I try not to be cocky. But I think that if they win next a week from Sunday, they're officially a dynasty. They have the potential of being the greatest years a football team has ever been. I think number wise, not championship rings wise, but number wise, I think that there's a legitimate argument that Mahomes is the greatest football player of all time.
Yep.
At this point, yes, Tom Brady has 7 rings. I am not doubt, like, I'm not saying that he isn't, like, you know, but I think when you see the numbers of what Patrick Mahomes has done over the years that he's played, the short time that he has played, it is unlike anything that we've ever seen before in the sport. So that's my piece. I'm really excited to, hopefully they win. As someone who lives in Nevada, there's a lot of Niners fans out here, not a lot of Kansas City fans out here. my wife's whole side of the family are Niners fans.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah, we're going over to their place Super Bowl Sunday, and it's us two with our Kansas City stuff, and then they're going to be all rooting for the Niners. So we'll see what happens.
Dope. I mean, we're a couple of weeks out from the big game. It'll be the Taylor versus Usher game, yes. Which, you know, Swifties, sure, versus the Ushies. which will be really, really fun to see how the halftime show goes. And yeah, like the conversation around, like, is Pat Mahomes the best quarterback we've ever seen? I think those conversations are legitimate. I think that's a big, real deal conversation that people can have in that space, thinking about where we are and where we are going to go. But those conversations are for the sports show whenever we do a Spawn on Me sports show again. So we'll have conversations about all of those, but I'm extremely happy for you and the rest of my Kansas City fam, because I have some folks who I'm related to who are big Chiefs fans. This episode, we're going to be talking about a couple of different things that have happened in the past couple of weeks, because we missed a couple of weeks in terms of conversations. You got a chance to play through and finish Like a Dragon. We wanted to talk a little bit this episode about the state of play that just happened a couple of days ago. Suicide Squad finally dropped, and there's a lot of conversation about, is that game good? Is that game one of the worst games that we've seen in a long time? Is that game the kind of canary in the coal mine for what we are seeing around live service games, which has been a big conversation for that? And I want to talk a little bit about the conversation around Xbox games moving potentially from the platform onto other platforms, which was a conversation that came up in the past couple of weeks. That was a big, huge deal in terms of sentiment and things like that. But first, I want to start off with your thoughts about Like a Dragon. I just started it maybe 2 or 3 days ago. I've been playing through it, but you had a chance to actually go through the entire game and have that story play out for you. What are your thoughts about Like a Dragon and how are you digging it? Because I know you played other parts of the series, so or have you played other parts of the series?
Yeah. So I've played the entire series outside of Ishin, which is like it's unrelated. You don't need to worry about it. So I played all of the previous Yakuza games leading up to Infinite Wealth. And I want to preface before I dig in here that I liked this game a lot. But I think I'm going to sound very negative on this game. Because when the reviews came out for this game, they were very glowing. Mm. And I was kind of surprised from people that I would 100% respect their opinions on, that are also people who have played all the Yakuza games and really love that series. They were a lot higher on it than I was. And I think a big part of that is the story of Infinite Wealth. The story of Infinite Wealth is we have Ichiban Kasuga, who's like the new protagonist for Like a Dragon, and then Kiryu Kazuma, who is he's been like the series protagonist for seven games, right? He's an iconic character, a legendary character, and they are co-protagonists in this story. And the way this game was marketed very much felt like a passing of the torch of Kiryu to Ichiban. Everything I'm going to say is open knowledge. It was marketed. It was, you know, no spoilers outside of what was already shown. So you find out that Kiryu has cancer. He's dying. Like, he is terminally ill. And the way that a lot of this game that's really, really great is them sunsetting Kiryu as a character. You get to see all these like side stories, these aspects of his life throughout the series, and you get a lot of really great closure as he's basically preparing to die. And Ichiban, who had such a great story, origin story in Like a Dragon, Yakuza Like a Dragon, the previous entry, he feels very pushed to the side despite being the main character. Like, in the beginning, it very much feels like, oh, this is another Ichiban adventure. You know, we're going to Hawaii. We have this goal that's in mind, and like, okay, this is going to be like the core thing that Ichiban is going to have a relationship with, some character growth, things like that. But by the time that the game is over, I just felt like nothing changed. I feel like that he didn't learn something. He didn't grow from his experience. And by the time you get to the second half of the game, there's a very pivotal point where if you've played the game, and when you play the game, you'll know what I'm talking about, where it's very much like Kiryu is the main focus of the story. And that's where things feel like that Ichiban is just kind of borderline irrelevant. Like, and that's the thing that's just like so upsetting. That's like probably the biggest thing that I think about consistently, is just how they failed Ichiban as a character when he was so good in Like a Dragon. Which was such a tall task, because Kiryu was such an iconic character. That's like, how do you create a character that is on par with the Dragon of Dojima? And they did it. And he's still lovable. He's still like very, he's a very empathetic person, despite growing up in the Yakuza, all this stuff. He's kind of like one of those things like, yo, once we're homies, once we've done something, we are bonded forever. Like, that's the kind of vibe that Ichiban exudes. And I think that's fine. Because, like, Sora from Kingdom Hearts, my big Kingdom Hearts guy, Sora is a lot like that. But the way that you incorporate that character trait into your narrative, it's got to feel earned. It's got to feel that it makes sense. I feel like that there are certain aspects in that story where people are doing things that are just kind of like unforgivable, borderline unforgivable. And then Ichiban's like, oh no, it's all good, 'cause we're friends. And like, that's just who I am. And I'm like, I don't, like, you know, there feels like there's really no consequences behind it. And so like the story, and then there's like the whole, like, actual ending of the game, which I'm very curious about how Yakuza fans are going to feel about it, because I think it's going to be very divisive, and there's more that I want to talk about it, but it's just like I don't want to set people's expectations on that, so I'm just gonna shut up. But I do think this game is incredibly fun. Like, exploring Hawaii's great. The Segway, I love riding on the Segway. I love the combat. They very much like added quality of life features to make the combat better. Where in Like a Dragon, when you did your attacks, you couldn't move. There was no like range grid where you could move around and position yourself. Yep. They added that in like in Infinite Wealth, and that was a big quality of life improvement. And then they added the tag team attacks, which I don't believe was in Like a Dragon, the first one. There was just all these things that made it better and more fun to play than it already was. And so like overall, like for those that care about scores, I would personally give it like an 8 out of 10. There's things I really, really like about this game, but when it comes to Yakuza, I really come for the story. I really come for the characters. And I just feel like they wanted to do a bunch of different things and it didn't all come together. Like part of me feels like there was really no purpose into like Hawaii being a setting outside of like, hey, we want to make a game in Hawaii when it comes to the story, you know? And so it really is like a very mixed bag in that sense. But I still had a lot of fun playing it. I'm really interested and curious about what the future of the series is going to be based off how that game ended. Especially for Yakuza fans who have played all the entries, I'm very curious as to how they're going to feel about it once they finish it. And I'm also very curious about how you're going to feel about it. Because like, I don't want this to deter you from playing it, but I think that this is like probably the worst game in the series to hop in on the series. And I'm seeing like, oh, it's gotten the most sales in the series ever. And I'm like, this is like the worst entry to do that. Cause like, you're literally more or less killing off a series iconic character. And that like, If no one's played the Yakuza games, they're not going to have like really the emotional ties that those that have like played all the games are going to feel, in my opinion. So I'm very curious as to how you're going to feel once you finish the game. Are you liking it? Like, how are you liking the combat? Because you know you're not a JRPG guy, so I'm very curious how you feel.
I'll be honest, I'm struggling with it a lot. Okay. It's not necessarily the JRPG parts of it at all. Like, okay. I like the combat stuff. I think that stuff it's okay. Like, it's not jumping out at me as like super interesting or intricate. It is very rudimentary in the way that you play that game and play that part of the game so far. And mind you, I am literally still in the beginning phases of this game. I'm like in.
Like, have you gotten to Hawaii yet?
No. Like, I'm not.
Okay. Yeah. So you're super early.
I'm super early. Yeah. Right. So for me, like, I think I'm like right before some of those parts too. Like, I got a prompt that was like, you better save because, we're about to get to this part where, this is going to be a long part of the game where you're not going to be able to save. Right. And I think a couple of things are in my mind when it comes to this kind of game. So, like, I knew what I was getting into when I jumped into it. I played the previous game, but not to fruition. I didn't finish it. I played through it, and I got bored, and I was like, I don't like it. I wasn't digging it. And started to jump into Like a Dragon, and, you know, I had seen a little bit of Ichiban and gotten a little bit of taste of him before. And I don't know if I like Ichiban. And I think the reason I don't know if I like Ichiban is because at least in this initial part of the game, there are things that he's doing and ways that he's acting that I think that as a society we have looked at in a kind of negative way. Even though he has this very kind of happy-go-lucky, kind of plucky attitude about life in the world. Like, I love the fact you talked about how he thinks about friendship and things like that. Like, I think that part of it is kind of cool because we don't see a lot of happy protagonists anymore. Like, most protagonists are kind of brooding and out for revenge and all of that stuff. And Ichiban is the complete opposite of that in the way that he carries himself. But so much so that when I play with him, I'm like, why am I with this grown-ass man baby going through Japan, doing this stuff with his homies and stuff, who are also like trying to be his mentors, but also like enabling him to still be a man baby. Like, he could, like, there's a moment in the beginning of the story where he's talking to a woman that he likes, and there's this whole sequence, and I like put my controller down and I was like, the fuck is this? Like, I was like, what is this? Why am I playing this again? Like, maybe it's not the fact that the character is the character in the ways that I want him to be, but I feel like the writing is just not great. It is a writing style that, because I am not used to that, because I do not play a lot of games like this, I am not a huge anime fan, all those things. And I'm not a Japanophile in that way. So it's like those pieces don't resonate with me. So I'm looking at this and it reminds me of some of the old kung fu flicks that I would watch when I was younger. And it was always this one character who was kind of the dullard. He was kind of the comic relief who was not really smart, but he would get through the battle, or he would find his way through to find a space where he could be victorious in that kind of way. And it felt fine for that moment in those times, but it feels like for a game that is going to be this big from Sega, that is really smart about the way they do writing for most of the stuff they do, that it feels like lazy writing for this character in my interpretation. Now, that could be totally off because I haven't played the entire series. I wasn't really attached to Ichiban in that way. There are pieces of it that kind of coalesce around him. But in that moment of like, Ka, how are you feeling about the game? I'm like, it's okay. I just don't know why I should care about Ichiban in any real way yet. Like, again, I'm super early on. And maybe there is a turn for him. Maybe there is a space where there's growth. Or maybe they're doing this to set this up for... Like, I think of Yakuza as a series, as this lineage, right? It has gravitas with it. It has all of this space in it that people have come along with this series and this IP for a long period of time. And hearing that Kiryu is now going away and is no longer going to be that person in the story, and Ichiban is taking his place, maybe this is the sprinkling of the beginnings of who this character is, so that five games down the road, you see that growth in his character in the same way that you saw with the previous character, right? Like, that character had a growth arc over seven games. This character will probably have a similar or, you know, a different version of a growth arc over the next couple of games that makes you really see he went from a child to a man in his personality, in the way that he carries himself, in the ways that he is able to do that stuff. Like, I'm not even asking for him to be a badass at the gate, but I'm like, be a fucking adult. Like, that part feels weird to play through that and to ask me to care about that particular layer of who this character is. So I'm struggling a little bit with it right now. I'm trying to find the good in it and give it a chance because I don't want to I don't want to poop on it without giving it an actual chance. But I'll be honest, it's really hard for me to like, and this goes across a lot of media for me, is like, if I feel like the writing is bad, it makes me not want to engage with it because it feels like a waste of time. In games like this, you have to kind of dig through to see the systems and all the other stuff to kind of like really get the full, appreciation for it. So I'm struggling a little bit with the fam. Like, I'm trying to give it a good go and trying to give it, the benefit of the doubt for a lot of stuff. But it's just hard right now to find pieces of it that make me want to continue to push, besides being like, besides the fact that we're going to talk about it probably, a little bit further down the line, or at least revisit the feelings around it at some point. So yeah, it's hard right now for sure.
Yeah, it's part of that is that you didn't like see like a dragon all the way through, right? Mm-hmm. And so Ichiban, Ichiban's backstory, right, is that he grew up in the Yakuza. He really looked up to his captain. He like saw him as a father figure, and boss's son was like, he provided for him. He was like in a chair and he like provided for him. And he basically had to, there's an event that happened where Ichiban basically took one for the team and went to prison for 10 years.
Mm.
And so when he got out of prison, he was very like not in tune with society. And so like a lot of the things that we feel like, oh, you're a 40-year-old man, you should know these like social things, he kind of doesn't. He's a goofball. He's a little bit of a doofus. And so like when he like at that point that you're talking about in the game, it's very much like, it's very endearing, but it's also just like, bro, you don't do it like this, because it's just, you know, it's an overwhelming thing.
Yeah.
And so that's just like kind of like his character, is that he's a lovable doofus. Like, and so if you don't really see it that way, if you don't like really know that, oh, that's who Ichiban is, then that moment is going to be like, wait, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
But yeah, I, you know, keep giving it a shot. I don't blame you again for not really super vibing with it, because this is a game where there's two co-protagonists and you're supposed to kind of already know what these characters are about,
right?
And I, you know, so that's a big ask. And so I am curious about, again, if other people that are hopping into the series for the first time, if they are enjoying it, if they're just like some people with Kingdom Hearts, I don't know what this story is. It's nonsense to me, but I am really digging the gameplay. I'm digging the map and, you know, exploring Hawaii. I think that might be the thing that you will personally gravitate towards more. But, and again, I wasn't crazy about the story. I think there's a lot of problems with it, but I do think the stuff with Kiryu mostly is really, really good. It's really hard not to
talk about the spoilers.
To talk about the spoilers, but what I will say without saying exact spoilers, I don't know why Sega and RGG marketed this game the way they did. Because this just feels like I can't say. But once you get to the end of the game and you know how that game ends, you're like, why did you market it? I feel like a little bit betrayed in the marketing, I guess, is the best way to explain it in some core points. And in a way that, like, if you marketed it the way that I think they're going with the series moving forward, I think that would have been more exciting. I would have been like, oh, this is going to be this of that. Like, okay, I'm very excited. But yeah, there's not much more to talk about without going into direct spoilers. But I definitely think that if you are listening to this and you want to get into Yakuza, I know that asking you to play seven of Kiryu's games before getting into Ichiban's first game is a tall ask, but at the very least, play
Zero.
Yakuza 6. No, I would say Yakuza 6, which is Kiryu's last game, outside of Gaiden. But play Yakuza 6, because then you can kind of get an idea of like what got Kiryu into the position he is going into Gaiden and Infinite Wealth.
Mm.
And then play Like a Dragon, get introduced to Ichiban, like things like that. Because I started with Like a Dragon. I started with Ichiban's first game was my first Yakuza. And there was stuff with Kiryu that comes up, and I'm like, I don't know. I know who Kiryu is. I know he's like the series protagonist up to this point, but I don't know like any of the stuff that he's talking about.
Mm.
Right. And so I ended up going back and playing all the Yakuza games, and I know his whole story now. And again, I know that's a tall ask for most people, but at the very least, I would play six, because six is kind of the stuff that plants the seeds going into Infinite at the very Infinite Wealth at the very least.
Okay.
That's what I would do if a reasonable recommendation. Yeah.
No, I appreciate that, because I feel like that's the thing too. Of like, I am always like a little bit apprehensive at the idea that you have to go back to go forward. Like, I feel like every game, for the most part, should be a self-contained thing. But then I think about like Mass Effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, if you were to just drop in at three, you would be kind of screwed in a lot of different ways if you really cared about the entire like relationship stuff there. So like, even when I say that to myself, I know that that is a unfair assessment to a series, even though that's what I want, if that makes sense, right? That's like, I want this to feel like an encapsulated moment and that I can feel and play through, and you can, but I don't think you'll get the same level of enjoyment if you haven't played the rest of those games.
Yeah, if you just started with Mass Effect 3, you'd be like, it would not hit the same as playing starting with Mass Effect 1. And but no, because the thing is with Kiryu in Infinite Wealth is a lot of his side stuff is reminiscing on like past things across the games, and there are this is very common knowledge, Kiryu is supposed to be dead, like he faked his death, and so he is basically he gets all this closure in secret, like he like hides somewhere and overhears conversations or things like that to get the closure that that he wants, and that's from characters that were significant characters across the series, as well as side characters from like mini game story arcs and stuff. Because Yakuza is very popular when it comes to a very popular thing in Yakuza games are the mini games. And there's like, there are arcs to some of those. And there's some really like, really nice and a little emotional moments where like this guy, like in Yakuza Zero, there's this guy that he does like these little race cars with, and he races, and there's like a whole arc behind that about being the best. And then he runs into him and he pretends that he's like not him. Because that's the thing in the series, is that Kiryu being dead is the worst kept secret in the world, but they still do it.
Right.
And so like, it's just like, dang. And then he's just talking about like, oh, this is what I would say to Kiryu if you were him. And it's just like, dang, man, that's really great stuff. It really is a series that, because there's definitely a level of truth in what you're saying. I am someone that likes to go back and play those games, but I also know that again, I know that that is not a reasonable thing to ask of someone, and so I can see that. But Yakuza is one of those game franchises where, if you play more, you'll get more out of it. And that's just how it is.
These are those kinds of games that I think are the perfect ones for those, like, you go into the options and you're like, catch me up kind of things that they do. Those like, you know, they do that in previously on Spider-Man 1. You get to see all the stuff that happened and you know, give me the big bits to get you caught up for that. I would love something like that. Maybe that's one of those things, like, that's a YouTube video night. Right, I'm sure someone has done the work of pulling together all the pieces of what this story is. Maybe I watch that and then go back into this game and feel like
Like a Dragon Gaiden does that when it comes to the core aspects of what Kiryu, what happened to Kiryu in the past. But again, it doesn't cover everything, right? Where like, if you have played everything, that's how you're going to get the fullest enjoyment. But Gaiden does an adequate job of explaining, like, oh, this is why Kiryu faked his death. Oh, this is why he's in the Daidoji faction. All this stuff. It explains it. And so, again, it is one of those franchises that you have to play. The more you play, the more you get out of. And thankfully, there aren't that many franchises like it. Kingdom Hearts is one. Legend of Heroes is one, but there's not that many. But and normally they're Japanese, you know, they're Japanese games. And so that's I totally get it. I totally see where you're coming from. But I'm really excited to see you play more and if it gravitates towards you or not.
Yeah, I'm gonna dig into more of it over the next couple of weeks and try to get it in. Now that the Spawnies are kind of wrapped on the recording side of it, it'll give me more time to play and to do more of that stuff. So excited for that. I know you've been playing through Grand Blue and or you've been playing
Grand Blue. 3? And Persona 3, yeah. So I'll talk about these really quickly because I'm still pretty early in both of them.
Yeah.
Grand Blue is interesting because a lot of people have been really high on that game, and I've played about 3 or 4 hours at this point, and I'm not crazy about it. Mm. I think it's fine. I think the combat is the best part about it. It's kind of its own thing. I would probably say compare it most to like the Tales of series. I don't know if you played Tales of Arise when that came out a little bit, but okay. Well, yeah, you know, it's a solid like action or real-time action RPG. The thing that's most interesting about it is that it feels like it's got mobile RPG game DNA in it, where you can play online, you can play with your friends, you can do these specific missions. I don't really know what the post game's like because I'm still playing through the main story, but even then the main story is super quick. I'm already on chapter 5 and I've only played for 3 or 4 hours and there's 10 chapters.
Oh wow.
So I'm halfway through the game, which is very, especially for a JRPG, very bizarre, very uncommon. And so I'm curious if it is the post game stuff that people have really gravitated to, because I just saw on Steam it is the most concurrent players for a JRPG in the history of the platform, which is wild. Like definitely not think that. So I want to play more, but man, it's hard to because Persona 3 Reload is so damn good. I love Persona 3 Reload. I played Persona 3 FES like 3 or 4 years back. I borrowed my friend's PS3 and I'm like, I really want to play through Persona because that was the easiest way you could play it at that point.
Yeah.
So I picked it up, played through it. I loved it. You know, it's not, I don't like it as much as Persona 4 and 5, but it is still a masterful JRPG. And this remake is phenomenal. It adds great new features to combat, quality of life features to the social aspects. The first Persona, the original Persona 3, didn't have social links with your male party members because it was meant for more for you to romance your female ones.
Interesting.
And they while they didn't add direct social links, they did add like events for you to hang out with them, learn more about their characters and things like that, so they don't feel left out this time.
Okay.
It's really, really good. I've already put in probably like 15 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, it is really, really great. And again, I think this is the game, especially because it's on Game Pass, but like this is the game that you should try to get into Persona, because it's the simplest when it comes to the dungeons. It's like you're going up a tower. That's all it is. You're going up a tower. You'll hit, you know, there are like certain blocks. So like the first block is like 20 floors. You have the first 20 floors, you hit the block. Okay, now it's time to do a bunch of social stuff. Like you can hang out with people, you can work a job, and whatever you do is going to benefit you in some way when it comes to the actual JRPG combat elements, which is really, really cool. So like you'll go to school and there'll be some days where a teacher will ask you a question. If you get the question right, your academics goes up, or your charm goes up because people think you're cool because you knew the answer. And then there's activities like you can work at the coffee shop and you get charm and courage for working at a coffee shop because it's like all busy all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Or you can do karaoke, which raises your courage because, you know, it's scary to sing in front of people, right? And so there's all these different, I think that's the scariest part of playing Persona for the first time is that there's just so many systems.
Yeah,
there's a lot of systems. There's a lot of tutorials to like introduce you to how everything works. But once you understand the flow of Persona, it's so easy and it's so addicting. It's okay. So addicting. You're always thinking ahead. You're like, okay, so on this day, I'm going to do this, and this. Like, you know, it's a really great system. And the combat is really, really fun. And they have added new mechanics to the combat. And they kind of redesigned Tartarus, which is the tower that you climb, which is really cool, giving it a little bit more of personality, identity than in the original, where it was kind of like the same kind of color every time you go up. There's no real like change. The voice casting is incredible, as all Persona games are. I think actually what's really great about Persona, and this may not apply to you a lot because you don't watch like a lot of anime or like VO stuff.
Yeah.
But whenever a new Persona game comes out, it kind of shows you, not everyone, of course, because there's so many talented voice actors. I don't want people to be like, think that everyone else is trash. But it gives you a good look at some of like the best current generation of voice actors there are. Because when the original Persona 3 came out, guess who was the voice of the main character? Yuri Lowenthal.
I was going to say Troy Baker.
Well, hold on. So Yuri Lowenthal, he's a legend now. He's a legendary voice actor. Persona 4, the voice of Kanji was Troy Baker.
Uh-huh.
And the voice of Rise was Laura Bailey. And now they're legendary, you know what I mean? And then Persona 5, Matthew Mercer, Erica Lindbeck, like...
Mm.
And they're on their way up too. Like it's just so like, that's the thing I've really noticed about Persona. And it's a very like, doesn't matter to anyone really. But to me, I just like notice that. I'm like, oh man, this is just like showing the kind of up and comers, if that makes sense, of voice acting. It's so cool. I really appreciate it. But yeah, I think this is a great entry point for you to play. I think you should give it a shot. And, you know, it is going to be a commitment, especially compared to like Infinite Wealth. It's going to be a bigger commitment for you to understand how the game works, understand how to use your time. But I think that once it clicks with you, if it does, you're going to be like, oh, I get it. I get why people love this franchise.
Okay. That gives me a lot to chew on because I'm trying to find, like for a lot of folks at home, one of the coolest things about having Cam on the show is that he knows that I am trying to figure out the, like, how do I dip my toe into the JRPG waters in an actual way and like try to figure out that stuff. So like, you know, his wealth of knowledge and, you know, your wealth of knowledge is just like so lovely to have on the show to be able to kind of dig through it, to Sherpa me through some of the conversations. But it's just like, I'm trying to figure out those pieces of like, why and where do people come to these games and really dig into, you know, all of that stuff. So it's really cool to be able to have that be in there and you chop it up with me on that stuff. So I'll report in once I start digging into it. I haven't started it yet, but I'm setting aside some time after DICE to be able to potentially do that.
Also, one last quick thing.
Yeah.
What's the coolest thing about Persona 3 is that one of your party members is a fucking dog. An actual dog. His name is Koromaru, and he is the cutest little boy. We love Koromaru.
I don't know if that sold me or unsold me on this game.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's awesome.
I think... No, I'm just playing. I want to talk about the state of play. Someone was like, there's Japan. I was like, and Kai is out. That's funny. I want to talk about state of play because state of play was kind of all over the place this year, all over the place last week. I think a lot of folks had seen the Xbox Direct. Because I want to talk about Xbox after the break. We'll take a quick break after this conversation and talk about the Xbox platform stuff. But I think a lot of folks watched the Xbox Direct and was like, yo, they knocked it out of the park. They did a fantastic job. Everyone was like, all right, cool. So now what is Sony going to do to kind of offset this and give their take on what's happening for the you know, their kind of move forward in this year? And, you know, I want to run down some of the games that got announced during the State of Play. So we have, there was a deep dive on Team Ninja's Rise of the Ronin. That was in there. Until Dawn Remastered coming to PS5 and PC. Stellar Blade was announced. Capcom shared another Dragon's Dogma 2 trailer that I think absolutely sold me on Dragon's Dogma. I'm like actually really, really excited for Dragon's Dogma now. Okay. Sonic and Shadow Generations got announced, which I knew you were going to be really excited for.
It's a year of Shadow. Shadows everywhere this year.
Shadows every year. Silent Hill, The Short Message dropped during the day. And I did not hear glowing things about that, which is interesting. Because I think a lot of people were still hyped for another Silent Hill. And people were like, this is not the Silent Hill that we want. V Rising is also coming to PlayStation 5. Dave the Diver has some Godzilla DLC that's coming. Zenless Zone Zero is in development. Metro Awakening VR looked really cool, actually.
Yeah.
Legendary Tales was revealed for VR and had the worst font that I've seen in a long time. Like, if you go look at the font that they used to show this announcement, I was like, yo, this is like bad Photoshop work. This is like the free fonts you get that you don't pay for.
That whole game looked a little goofy to me.
It looked a little ass, to be honest. I was like, this looks a little ass. Foam Stars got there. Helldivers 2, which is coming out probably in the next couple of days, like February 8th, was in there. Yeah. But the thing that for me was there were two things in there that were the most important and exciting for me. One was Ken Levine's new game, Judas, which I should have pulled a video for. I forgot. Is Judas, which again feels very, very Bioshock-y. The thing I think is going to be actually really exciting or interesting about that is going to be the way that the gaming press covers that, because of if we think about the larger conversations around crunch, one of the first big major game developers who, you know, was in that stratosphere of the kind of auteur conversation was Ken Levine. And it was found that Bioshock Infinite had a ton of crunch in it. And the internet came for him and the gaming press came for him. And, you know, that was a big deal. So now 10 years after that, you have Judas that's going to come out. And it'll be interesting to see how that gets covered. But the biggest kind of like major part of the conversation was, of course, Hideo Kojima's Death Stranding 2. And Death Stranding 2, again, like, I am a person who, I don't stand Kojima in the way that a lot of people stand Kojima, but Kojima always surprises in some form or fashion, not only with the way he makes games and the ideas that he puts forth within games. But I'll be honest, Kojima, for multiple iterations of his work, has been at the forefront of the technological race when it comes to making stuff. His stuff may be weird and funky and kind of just like all over the place and out and all over there, but he pushes the medium forward in a way, at least technologically, that I think is extremely impressive. Like, this game could be something that maybe is on the PS6. Like, the level of detail for some of the stuff, I'm going to fast forward past that part because it's gross. I hate that part of the trailer. He's like, yo, I'm going to pull these.
I'm glad you did that. I'm just going to say, I'm glad you did that, because I don't like that either.
I kind of hate that part.
Yep.
But like, I'm really excited for this new Kojima joint, because I was expecting this to be, you know, kind of milquetoasty when it came to, oh, we're going to get a sequel. They're going to go back to, you know, wherever the focus is going to be. There were parts of this trailer that, and I'll pop back into it. There were parts of this trailer that, from a technical standpoint, like, blew me away visually. I'm gonna switch to it real quick, but like there are spots in this that just look abnormally cool. Like, for a game where you're going to be traversing a lot of these really large, big spaces, like, to get all of this atmosphere and all this atmospheric feeling in a lot of these places with these different biomes and all this kind of stuff, like, that is the thing that I'm, like, really hyped for, because, you know, Death Stranding is a very, you know, is a game about solitude in a lot of different ways, right? And for them to play with that, not only with the way that they're building this game out and the visuals of stuff and what potential new story they're going to be talking about, just has me like really, really excited for what this is going to be. Cam, what are your thoughts about Death Stranding 2 and what we might get and all the pieces that go along with that?
I am so incredibly excited for Death Stranding 2. I never finished the first one.
Ah.
And the only reason I haven't is because there's always just been something in the way,
yeah,
of me taking the time to play it. And that is, while I love the gameplay is exhausting in a way that I can only play so much of that game at a time. Mm. Like, mentally, it is exhausting. Because you're kind of just going from kind of the same points over and over again for an extended period of time until you finish all the deliveries, and then you go to a new biome, and, like, that just got really exhausting for me. But I still really, really enjoy that game a lot. And this is the game that really made me understand the hype around Kojima, because I never played a Metal Gear Solid game. Oh. I've played the first two. I think the first one has like one of the best stories in a video game. Yep. It's incredible. I think it plays like ass. I'll have it on record. Terrible. And, you know, I liked 2, not as much as 1 overall, but I liked 2. And I do want to go back and finish 3, 4, Peace Walker, and 5. So this is going to be the year. This is going to be the year. No more excuses. I'm going to find the time. I'm going to get through it all. And even more so, I want to platinum this game. I don't care about platinums. I really don't. I have maybe 10 total of my lifetime. And I've been playing the game on the PS4 version, and I already have the PS5 version. And so once I finish the PS4 version, I'm uploading my save to the PS5. Once I get the platinum, I'm uploading my save to the PS5, and I'm going to get the platinum on the PS5 version too. Like, I really, really like that game. I think it does a lot of really cool, interesting things. I understand why it got the criticism that it did. Yep. I think some of it was a little bit more harsh than others, but obviously that's all people's opinion versus my opinion. Yep. But I totally get it. It was a very experimental game. Some things worked, some things didn't. This is probably going to be very similar. I'm just very curious as to what they're going to do to like make that experience, at least for me, a little less taxing to play over time. Because there was a level of, with it being a walking sim, there was a level of realism that got kind of frustrating. Yeah. Where like, You somehow like step on a rock, like a common rock, a weird way, and then you just drop all your shit, and it's just like, okay, sure. But there's a lot of things from that trailer that I'm really excited about. Like, I think it's super creative and cool that there's like a puppet that's stop motion that moves 8 frames a second, and it's
Timothy Chalamet.
and just how that works, or Alan Wake, or John Wick, or And so that's really cool. And that shot where you're like, the moon is like right there, I'm like, what is that about? Right. I need to know about that. You're in the desert. That looks breathtaking. I want to check that out. There's a lot to be excited about. And I'm looking forward to it.
I think first of all, the stop motion puppet thing at first threw me off, and then it sneered, and I was like, okay, I love this puppet. It's stupid, but I was like, oh, and then I found out it was Timothée Chalamet doing the voice, and I was like, I don't like it anymore.
Wait, is it actually Timothée Chalamet doing the voice?
Timothée Chalamet is the voice of that puppet. Which is the reason why you saw them hanging out at Kojima Productions.
I thought that was a joke at first. No, I didn't know.
Nah, he said it like later on.
Wow. Okay.
He's
okay.
Actually the voice of it, which is kind of cool. The thing that I do want to end out on this part of the conversation, because I'm in the same boat with you in terms of my hype just raised to the roof. Let's talk about Kojima triple dipping basically at this point. And we saw that he has a project out or a project coming on Xbox that's going to be with Jordan Peele. It's going to be more in the kind of horror space. What was interesting in the state of play was Herman Holst coming out and basically saying, hey, we wanted to, you know, we wanted to do another thing with you alongside the Death Stranding 2 game that you're going to be doing with us. And he's going back to what sounds like a espionage action game, which again is what his pedigree is known for in terms of Metal Gear. But in a weird way, I wish I had the clip to pull. It sounded like Herman and the PlayStation Nation went to Kojima and was like, yo, we need you, baby. We need you to do something for us that's new, because we're looking at the kind of roadmap for where we have. We need something to get the player base really excited. And it felt like a life raft moment. Like, it was a life preserver moment.
Really?
Where they were throwing this out and being like, Kojima, come save us a little bit. I think like Kojima is going to go where the money is and where the artistic, you know, liberties are going to go. Like, that's going to be who he is no matter what, which I think is cool. But it did feel like, at least for me, this was a moment where Sony showed a little bit of worry and was like, we need to go back to a thing and go back to a person who we know, as soon as you put his game on our platform, that's millions of sales. That's a huge deal with it. And because of the fact that Microsoft is now going to be doing a game with him, that feeling like, you know, Konami screwed you over, we're going to treat you right and give you the space to do the game that you wanted to do in a way that you haven't been able to do before, how about we make that happen? So that was an interesting thing for me to kind of pull back from that last part of that conversation, and was like, man, Kojima is like the savior right now for them if you think about where they're trying to go from a PlayStation and Sony perspective. So that was an interesting takeaway from that. I don't know if you felt that way, but that was what kind of came across to me.
I wouldn't go to that direct path. I think it's more that Sony is all in on Kojima in the sense of big budget, like Hollywood, getting Hollywood names into these games type stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a life preserver, because, you know, when I don't want to go down the line, but we have a good idea of what every studio, like first party studio, is working on now. Mm-hmm. And like around what time we can kind of expect those games. Mm. And so I don't think so. I think that like PlayStation is in a pretty good spot. And I think that, you know, who knows, but they probably gave Kojima this deal to do this new IP and said, like, hey, if this is successful and you know, you've gotten your chance to do something different and you can still do that, but we want you to go back to what you're known for at this point. We want you to do that. But I'm also just like, the man's 60 years old.
Right.
The man's 60 years old at this point. And knowing that he is seemingly going to try and launch another new franchise within the next 5 years.
Right.
I don't know. Like,
we need to find who, because I don't think Kojima has any kids, but it's like, we need that, like, LeBron to Bronny. We need to find out, like, who the person that Kojima is going to pass the torch to, because he's going to get... But the weird thing about it is, like, so many folks in the Nintendo camp are really old and still making games. And
that's what I was going to say. So, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is that, like, I think that just a lot of Japanese creators are just down to work until their pulse is flat.
Yeah.
So... Who knows? Like, as long as Kojima's health is in a good state, he's just going to keep doing what he wants to do. He wants to create. You know, there's, like you said, Miyamoto at Nintendo still there. Sakurai is still making games. We don't know what he's working on now. It's probably in the next Smash Bros., but we'll see. Tetsuya Nomura, he's starting to get there in age. Yoshinori Kitase, who, you know, director of Final Fantasy 6 and 7, he's getting there in age. That was like the big reason why they did Final Fantasy 7 remake in the first place. They were in a meeting and they were like, we're getting old. If we want to do this, we need to do this now. I think that there's that as long as Kojima's healthy, he can keep doing what he wants to do. But I just also hope he kind of puts that into perspective when he like makes this new franchise and say like, hey, we're going to limit this to this many games, because if not, you know, who knows what will happen. So
I also think, and good point on the kind of movie layer of there, because if you think about the two big houses, Microsoft does not have an arm of it that is directly linked to picture making, to movie making, while Sony Pictures is that brand. And I also think with now Kojima Productions now basically on the hook for three different games, I would not be surprised if somewhere down the line we may hear some potential mutterings about crunch coming from Kojima Productions. I don't want to tag that to them, but like three games is a big deal, and his studios have never been that big. Like,
yeah, I actually looked into, once they announced that, looked into it. I was like, how big is this studio?
Yeah,
because when he, and I couldn't get a direct answer, but he did say in an interview, if I remember correctly, please don't quote me on this, that he doesn't want his studio to be more than 100 people. And there's no way at this point, there's no way that he has only 100 people working at his studio.
There's ways that you outsource some of that stuff in the Sony ecosystem. And Sony, I'm sure that they would throw all their resources at it in a way to be able to help do that. Especially knowing that they are like, you're one of the big dogs and we want to make sure you feel good about the project. But I would not, you know, mark this down. I will say, quote this for me, don't be surprised if we hear some conversations about crunch maybe somewhere down the line from what that may be. Or maybe it's a thing where the Decima engine is so good that you can make multiple things in it and it doesn't freak out. Like, you don't have to do a lot of turnover in a lot of different ways to be able to make that stuff work because it is so well made and gives you all that time. But there are still people who have to make some of that stuff.
You know what I'm thinking? I actually want to bring up one last thing that I'm curious about. I'm honestly very curious if Sony hasn't thought about, and I can understand why, because they want, I understand why if they didn't want to, but I'm curious if they genuinely have considered making Decima like their Unreal Engine in a way that like it can be licensed to any developer and they get a certain percentage of the profit, right? Like it's like 30%, I think, is for Unreal 5 or Unreal. I don't know. I think that's pretty easy money. And I think that like, I think that it's not that damaging to do it, for in my opinion, because even if you license it, you need like big teams to be able to create games in that engine. So that's just something that I really thought about. You're like, you know what? Like they license that, or they're letting Kojima make Death Stranding in Decima, and it's just been widely regarded. I mean, Horizon Forbidden West, like, say what you want about the game. I haven't played it, but I know that people weren't super crazy about it. Mm. It's stunning. Yeah, absolutely beautiful. Stunning.
Yeah.
And so I would be very curious if Sony's ever thought about that.
It would be interesting. If I'm Kojima, I would say no. Only because, like, yeah, the money would be cool. But, like, if you think about where he is right now, he gets to have a proprietary thing that he has made, or is, you know, he's gotten the development team to make, that makes his game stand out in a way from every other game on the planet. And I think that is a thing that if you're a creative at that level, that's like, hey, I'm Picasso. Let me teach everybody else how to be Picasso. You're like, nah, I'm Picasso.
I mean, I think we might be talking about two different things right now. Like, I'm not talking about like really Kojima using Decima. I'm just saying like Sony just generally licensing it off to any studio.
Well, that's what I mean.
And
that's exactly what I mean. Like, if I am Kojima,
yeah,
and I'm like, hey, if Sony comes to me is like, hey, we love Decima Engine, we want to figure out a way to use this across our studios, our first party studios, and then license out a second version so that other people can use it.
Mm.
If I'm Kojima, I would tell them no, not because I think that it would be detrimental. The profit will be there because they have to pay you out of pocket in the beginning anyway, plus you get the residuals off of whatever that would be. But I think for him, Kojima is always about style. Kojima is always about legacy. Kojima is always about, how do I make a stamp in this industry in a way that nobody else can? It's the reason why he's doing movies. It's the reason why he's pulling in, what's his face? Guillermo del Toro. Like, he is wanting to connect with the biggest names in the planet so that people look at his work as, this is a thing to put on a pedestal. And even though he's humble about it, there's also a layer of that is like, why would I give my art away to the masses when it is a thing that is distinctly me and distinctly mine? So I think to a certain extent, you lose a little bit of that by licensing it away, because Kojima Games at this point, like, even when the conversation, like, even when I played Metal Gear 5, which wasn't in Decima, but
it
was in Fox Engine. Even Fox Engine looked remarkably different than everything that was in Unreal 4 at the time. Even the highest level of fidelity stuff that was in Unreal 4 at the time, Fox Engine looked better than it. And everybody else was like, I want Metal Gear, the next Metal Gear, wherever that's going to wind up being, to be in Decima Engine once they saw Death Stranding. Right? And once they saw PT, and once they saw that stuff, they were like, oh, imagine what this will look like in all of these, in that engine with that fidelity and that kind of big world building and stuff. Right? So I don't think he wants to give that away just for the sake of money, when he will then be the person that everyone looks to be that guy who's driving innovation. In that.
You think that people will just try and like copy his style? Yeah.
The hard thing about engines is like, you can, like, a lot of people don't understand how some game engines work, right? So like, everyone was hyped on Unreal Engine 5. Like, everyone was hyped on Unreal Engine 4, right? But didn't know that multiple games that looked really, really different were based on Unreal Engine 4. People take those pieces and break them apart and add stuff and fix things and move things around. And then you have another version that could look completely different but it has the foundation of Unreal Engine 4, right? Unreal 5 is very different because of all of those pieces, because now it's licensed in a different way, and it just has different layers of the technology that you get to piece together to make all anything that you want. I don't think Decima is as nimble as Unreal in that way, and I think that that's good for Kojima, because he then gets to make games that look vastly different than literally everything else on the planet. And I think that is way more worth it in that way. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a quick 3-minute break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about Xbox games potentially moving platforms. And what does that mean for you as an Xbox fan in the mix? So we're going to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back after this. Hey everybody, Khalif here from the Spawn of Me podcast. Hey, we have been in the market for new PCs for a long time, and for our 10th year anniversary, the wonderful folks from NZXT have partnered with us in a collab to be our hardware sponsors. So, if you are looking for a new PC to stream or to game in the best way possible, go check out nzxt.co/spawnofmeBLD, and you'll be able to find a perfect PC for you, whether that be the Player 1 machine, Player 2 machine, or Player 3 machine. The ones that we're rocking for our new studio build, they have everything you possibly could need for the best PC experience on the planet. Remember to go check out nzxt.co/spawnonmeBLD, and they will get you set up right. Much love and peace. Welcome back to the Spawn of Me podcast. I'm your host, Khalif Adams, rocking with the best in the business, Cam Hawkins, getting it in, making it happen. We had a really good conversation about Like a Dragon. We had a really good conversation about State of Play and all of the goodness there within. One of the things we want to end out on this episode of Spawn of Me with is a conversation that came up over the past couple of weeks about Xbox games coming up and potentially going to other platforms. There's been rumors about, you know, Hi-Fi Rush being the biggest game in that conversation, going to potentially PlayStation, I think, and other folks thinking about maybe games going to Nintendo platforms. Cam, I know you wanted to talk about this because this was something on your mind as an Xbox fan in that way. Dig into it. Like, tell me your thoughts about where the kind of conversation is going. Give the folks at home a little bit of an overview of like where things are and your feelings about it, about where you hope they're going and maybe aren't going.
So it's kind of like it's a two-part thing. Part of it is the multi-platform aspect, and another part of it is the them basically shutting down their entire physical media department for Xbox. As you see from behind me, or, you know, or if you're listening, I collect things and I am very much about physical media, especially when it comes to game preservation, just because games can get delisted. Like just this week, there's just a bunch of games that just got delisted off of Steam, like Spec Ops: The Line, great game, just got delisted everywhere. It happens, you know, obviously it doesn't happen all the time, but it is enough. It's still just, it happens. You want to have that physical copy for the games that you care about. And so for me, especially as we've been seeing Xbox get more and more JRPGs on the platform, Atlas, Unicorn Overlord's going to be on Xbox. Square Enix is putting more games on Xbox. It's really sad to see that we may not be getting physical media on Xbox within, like, by this time next year. It might be all gone. Mm. And with that, along with the game, Xbox games, first party games going multi-platform, in general, I don't care. Like it's one of those things where Xbox for a very, very long time has been playing a different game than PlayStation and Nintendo. They're trying to be more than just a console platform. They're trying to become a platform bigger than that. And so when they announce their games and say that, oh, this game is going to be exclusive to this platform, that's cool. But now that we're seeing that these games are going to other platforms, it feels like a kind of it hurts them because now people on other platforms are just going to think to themselves, that's eventually going to come to these other platforms. I'll just wait it out. And that's not going to get them to buy consoles to play. And with PlayStation Plus Extra like being a thing, Game Pass is not coming to PlayStation. I don't think it will. And that's been like their big selling factor this entire time, which it's a great deal. And I love Game Pass.
Yeah.
And then there's also the idea that with the physical media being seemingly gone or going away, and putting current and potentially future Xbox games that are like those single player, like big budget experiences. And this is obviously all hypothetical. It feels like Xbox might be trying to no longer have a console going to the next generation of consoles. Mm-hmm. That they're gonna dissolve into a third party, and kind of like what Sega did with the Dreamcast. And I don't want that to happen. Mm-hmm. That worries me. That is a yellow flag for me, just based off of these current, facts and also rumors, right? Because like the rumor of like Hi-Fi Rush coming to other consoles, that's more or less a lock. But then there's also the talk about Sarah Bond and gonna talk about stuff in the spring about Sea of Thieves potentially coming to other platforms. It is one of those things where I am very, very curious about what Xbox as a platform is going to look like by the end of this console generation. And it also feels a little bit hypocritical of the message that Xbox has been sharing for the past few years now. Mm-hmm. About like being able to play anywhere, being able to play on cloud, being able to play on your console, being able to play on PC. Like, if that's the path that it's going, that is not what I want it to be. That's not what I want it to be. I like having a console. I have a Logitech G Cloud. I remote play on my console sometimes. I do the cloud streaming sometimes if I'm not at home and I have it. I like where Xbox is right now, but these current steps that we're starting to see is beginning to worry me.
Hmm. I think that's reasonable. I am not a person who is a collector. I actually don't want more physical media. I'm very much more like, I want everything to go digital if you possibly can. Only because, and I understand the game preservation layer of it. I understand the like access layer of it. Not everybody has high speed internet, especially here in the States. Like, there are actual like detriments to the removal of physical media being in the space. I think there's also a detriment to collecting more physical media in the space. Like, I think folks often are on two sides of the same camp, right? Where they're like, I want to be as eco-friendly as possible, but also I want to have as much physical shit as I possibly can, which also is kind of a oxymoron in some ways, right? Like, I haven't seen anybody make yet the like recyclable, like, I don't see people doing the recycle, program for video game discs, even though you probably could. But I think there's that conversation about like physical versus digital. I do think that if Xbox were to stop making a console with a disc drive, you'd still have a console, but you just wouldn't be able to use physical discs with it. So you'd still get that like only on Xbox thing that you would get. It's just not a physical disc anymore. And I think the idea, I think, you know, no one knows exactly what the long play is going to wind up being. The things that we do know are that everyone who makes hardware eats a big part of that in terms of their potential profits, because hardware is extremely hard to do. You have to continue to keep up with the trends in technology. And usually, you know, you are betting for enough adoption to get out of the red to be able to get into a space where you can be profitable for all of that stuff. Microsoft has been saying for the longest that we are in third place. A lot of that, I'm sure, is because of sales, but I'm sure a lot of it is because of console adoption and it not being as high as it used to be. So that, coupled with that conversation of playing anywhere and on any device, like, makes sense from a strategy perspective. And I see how people can be upset by that. I don't understand it, though, because I'm like, if you're an Xbox fan, you don't lose anything except for, at least in my mind, you don't lose anything except bragging rights. And bragging rights don't matter in a real way. If you're on another console, you get to potentially play cool stuff that you saw on another console that you didn't have access to. So that's a win on that end. So it's an interesting thing. And then, like, if they go third party and they stop making hardware, they have God knows how many studios, right? You're still going to be able to get good games from those folks. That's a thing that is decoupled from hardware anyway. And only thing that changes that, if you're a studio who's in that mix thinking about hardware, is we have to at least make our game technologically to a certain spec to fit that console and that other, like, whatever those consoles may be. It could be liberating for developers to say, like, well, we get to make whatever we want. The only thing then is that is the biggest issue is storage space and deliverables, like where you are able to deliver that stuff and how are you, what are the vectors for delivery when it comes to that next layer of stuff. So I get it. If you're an Xbox fan, you're like, well, why am I still cheering for this team when they're kind of abandoning me? And I just think that it's a interesting way to look at a problem that isn't necessarily a problem. Like, it doesn't change the way you play. It doesn't change the way that you think about games, unless you, again, you don't have high speed internet. And if you don't have high speed internet already, that's not going to change a console, having a console or not, unless, again, they do really fully pull all physical media from the ecosystem. Then that becomes a bigger conversation, not only for Xbox, but for the way that they are thinking about the future of the console, or the future of the Xbox business in that way. So that's kind of where I've landed for those parts of that conversation. Because it was a lot of folks who got in my ass about that the other day when I was talking about it. And I was like, but why are you upset or worried? Like, you still get to play the thing. Somebody else gets to play the thing. Everybody gets to play the thing. Why is this a problem?
I understand where they're coming from when they say this. Yep. I don't particularly care. But I think the big thing is that Xbox has been giving and giving and giving, and they haven't gotten anything in return. Like, in the sense of, like, for example, GoldenEye on Switch, right?
Mm.
And it has, like, it got on Switch as multiplayer, all this stuff. Oh, but Xbox didn't get that, even though they own the IP. And then, like, Banjo's in Smash. But what did Xbox get? Like, what did Xbox consumers get out of that? Nothing. And it's that, you know, giving something and not getting something in return as an Xbox consumer, that I think is what Xbox, you know, players are upset about.
I wonder though if we think about that in the greatest kind of, like, conversation, sure. Like, even the conversation about Hi-Fi Rush, right? Hi-Fi Rush, I love that game. I think that game is brilliant. I think it's super dope. That game was not thought to be, and I don't think anybody who is worth their salt in the space. And shout out to Tango, shout out to Bethesda. Knew that that game was going to pop the way it did. Like, that was a shadow dropped game. I don't think anybody was like, this is going to be a flagship game for the Xbox brand. This was like, this is a cool project that caught fire, and everyone was like, yo, this is kind of dope. Like, this is actually better than we expected. I think the problem really gets into if you don't have parity, feature parity with the biggest games that you have on the market. But like Banjo, I don't think that fits. Hi-Fi Rush, I don't think that fits. GoldenEye, I mean, are we really like that excited about an old GoldenEye game? Yes, there's nostalgia there. But like me as a person who doesn't care about older stuff in that way,
I get where
people lean into that, but I feel like that's also like it's an okay thing to not have, even if it's not the thing that you want, even if there isn't parity across another system.
Yeah, I don't think it's the particularly the product in of itself. It's just it's more of a principle thing that people are like upset about. It's just Xbox is giving something to one of these other platforms, whatever it may be, and they don't get anything in return, right? Like, it's like, you know, for an extreme, using this as a complete extreme, right? Like, we're not giving, or like, you know, Xbox is not giving Indiana Jones to PlayStation 2, and then we get Marvel's Spider-Man. Like, that's not
sure.
Yeah, and again, like, I don't care. I really don't care. Like, as long as I can play my games on Xbox, because that's what I like to do, right? Like yeah. If you know, there are definitely games that I have to play on PlayStation. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is my most anticipated game this year, and I'm playing that on the PlayStation 5, and I don't care because I love that game. Yeah. But like, that is, you know, Xbox is my preferred place to play, and so I just personally feel that, based off the things that we do know and the things that are rumored and things like that, I think Xbox is potentially going down a path that I do not like.
Mm.
As someone who has played, you know, the Xbox and COG Xbox.
Here's a question for you before we end out, because I think that we'll revisit this conversation when more information comes out, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're actually losing anything when these things happen? Like, do you feel like the experience for your pick up a controller, turn on your TV, play a game experience is diminished by a game that you have and wanted to play on that system being played in another place?
Yeah, that stuff does not bother me.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that, like, if there's a game that the crux for me is the physical media stuff.
Sure.
As someone who has played on Xbox, who's like primary console has been Xbox for three generations, starting with the 360. I honestly don't know if I think that if I were to, if they stop doing physical media, I will see myself playing more games that may be available on Xbox on PlayStation or on a different platform or Switch or like a, you know, or a different console that has a physical copy of that game. If it's a game I really care about, right? Because I want a physical copy, because especially again, as someone who's a JRPG guy, JRPGs are kind of that niche where those games, when those physical copies run out, they're extremely expensive. The aftermarket for JRPGs, like that genre, is very expensive. And so it is a niche thing. It definitely is. I'm not going to deny that. But that is something that Nintendo, like first party Nintendo games are, which is much more common, is another big thing, right? Like when a first party Switch game, or like even if you look back at the Wii U games, like used copies of Wii U games that like did not sell like super well, a console did not sell super well, you're looking at $80 minimum for most of them. And like, that's, and now that like there's no online functionality for the Wii U, the store is closed. That's the only way you can play. Like, I know that's like a very specific example, but that's like, but that is a thing, right? It's just like when a game that you care about or a game that you know is going to be hard to get if you don't get that physical copy later, it's something that I care about. It's something that I want to have on Xbox, and my Switch, depending on the game. And if that's not no longer there and it's only digital only, then, like, for example, let's just say the next Persona, Persona 6, is coming out. It's only physically releasing on PS5 or PS6. I'm probably going to buy it for PlayStation, and I'm probably going to play it on PlayStation because I want that physical copy. And I hate that, like, that Xbox potentially moving away from that, getting rid of physical media, is kind of like forcing my hand to do that. Or it's making me double dip, which I really don't want to do. You know, like, games are games are expensive, and so like there's two different ways to look at it. It's like, I either have to double dip, I play it digitally on Xbox, or I just pick it up physically on another platform and play it on that platform.
Yeah,
which sucks because I want to play it on Xbox. So it's just, I know, I know that you don't particularly care on like platform as much as I do.
Yeah.
But when because I'm not a PC guy, right? If I was a PC gamer, this would be so much easier. You know what I mean? But I try to avoid PC gaming at all costs. Sure. I grew up a console player. That's what I like to do. I love the Xbox controller. You know, it's just kind of things when you're in an ecosystem that you really enjoy. It really sucks when like they're making changes that impact you really care game, about that may push you away from that ecosystem.
Yeah, I'm on, you know, I play on everything at this point. You know, I'm lucky enough to have multiple consoles.
Sure,
all of those stripes and stuff, so I have the ability to play in multiple places, and you know, there's folks at home who don't have that option, which I totally get and appreciate and understand. I think at the end of the day, I want to find all the ways that Xbox can continue to be sustainable, and I want to try to figure out good ways for them to acknowledge where they can use technology to help offset some of that stuff. For me, I wish, and this is the thing that I was hoping for, and no one has nailed it because I don't think the use case actually proves itself out. Like, I do think, yes, physical media folks are in that space. I also think that we've seen this across multiple generations where people have talked about backwards compatibility, and when the numbers kind of bear out, no one uses it, right? So it winds up being a hard deal to kind of satisfy the need to make that work if people aren't actually using it, even though they've been asking for it. So last thing that we'll say is from Thirsty Panda in the chat on this subject. He says, physical media for life, he says, they say in the chat. Well, word. That was a beefy episode of Spawn on Me. And again, Cam, thank you so much for being here and rocking. Let me know what you think in the comments over on Spotify, because we do our, you know, leave a comment on Spotify stuff. So make sure you know, let us know. Are you worried about physical media going away? Are you worried about Xbox, you know, kind of moving in a different direction? All of that stuff we'll talk about. Cam, I'm going to let you go for this episode. Again, thank you so much for being here. You'll get more Cam in a future episode for sure. So make sure you give Cam some love, as always. For all that business. But I think, you know, one of the things that will be really important to see and to kind of move forward with is, you know, we have a lot of stuff moving in the space. I think it's morphing in a lot of different ways, and I think it's going to be really, really cool to see where that goes. So everybody in chat, give Cam some love as we let him go for this episode. Cam, I'll bug you on the backside a little bit later in the week. And for everybody who is here on twitch.tv/spawnonme, please, please, please make sure you're going to give us some love on all the podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, especially because we put our video episodes up there. And yeah, we announced that Spawnies 3 will be on twitch.tv/spawnonme and will be simulcast on IGN this year for our third annual award show. There's been a lot of really good conversations happening today, and just really hyped for what the future of what Spawnies is going to be. It's going to be a very bright one. So until next week, we're going to get up out of here. Wash your hands, wash your butt, get up out of here. Have some fun this weekend, and we'll all see you on the flip side. Much love to you all. Peace.